everybody. Thanks for joining us for another great edition of Talking Ticks. I am, of course, Scott Gerard, and joining me, of course, Tommy Johnson and Daniel Zollinger. Probably got a light one for you this week. It's, you know, there's no real games being, you know, that were played other than the Army-Navy game, of course, always a great tradition. Had the president out for the coin flip. So that's about it. Other than that, it was awards week. I feel like we got to talk about the Heisman ceremony itself. I mean, you could be surprised or maybe not surprised, but man, these Pavias, I can't wait till his next 5 years of eligibility go out. Anyway, have some LSU news, not really much, but some. But I guess the biggest thing we could talk about is probably the playoffs. That's coming up starting Friday, actually. So wanted to check in with you guys first, like we always do, see how things are going. Hope you had a good week. Happy to talk about at least, you know, some still football for, I guess, the remaining few weeks. But after that, obviously, we're going to shift our focus. But Tommy, Daniel, how y'all doing?
Man, good to be with you. Good to be talking about another week of college football. Like you said, main thing this past weekend was the Heisman Trophy and all the other awards. But you know, we've now got all eyes on the playoff. A bunch of good matchups this coming weekend, and I'm excited to go over it with y'all.
Yep, it was the quiet before the storm, I think you could say, with only the Army Navy game here. So not as intense as the last couple of weeks, which had been busy both in general college football and LSU in particular with the Lane Kiffin hiring and all the media surrounding that. But not much on LSU's front, as they still have the Texas Bowl a couple of weeks away. But yeah, it'll be exciting to break down these playoff games and see what's going to happen with all the drama saying who's in, who's out, all the Notre Dame stuff. But hopefully the games live up to it, considering last year the first round was not super competitive. Unfortunately, maybe we'll see some improvement this year, but always exciting no matter what.
True that. And it will remain to be seen, although at least we start off a good one, I would say, on Friday night. You have Oklahoma and Alabama. I don't know, I guess Alabama's been gifted a spot, many would say, and I would agree with those many. And I don't know, I still feel like Oklahoma already beat them earlier this year. Obviously, it's harder to do. Well, I guess we could talk about that in a moment. But point being, it's going to be a good game. It's going to be on Friday night, and then after that, the dominoes fall. But real quick, there wasn't really much LSU news. I mean, we know a couple of guys are sticking around for the bowl game. Some other guys are not sticking around next year. I do know, I saw, that at least LSU is going to have 10 early enrollees come January. So, I mean, they didn't specify who, but we are going to have that. So that's great. I mean, your signing classes just can't wait to be here. There's going to be 10 of them, which means they're able to get into that spring practice and the training regimen early, which is awesome. And I do know that Caleb Jackson is no longer going to be with the team, as well as Ashton Stamps and Juwan Johnson. I mean, you kind of hate to lose any of them, but I don't know. If Caleb Jackson's leaving, then I don't know. I guess he can read the writing on the wall in the running back room. Still not quite sure who the coach will be. Frank Wilson said that's going to be determined after the bowl game. They're just focused on the game now. But I don't know. I mean, We already lost Juwan Johnson. He's leaving too. He wasn't really like, you know, like an actual running back. I saw it. He was, obviously. He did a lot of running back work for us, but he was just kind of like a utility guy, you know, an athlete. Caleb Jackson was a guy who's, I don't know, showed really good flashes a couple years ago and just kind of took a backseat ever since then, unfortunately. But I don't know, maybe they know that some other guys are coming in. I don't know. I don't think there's really any real reason to be alarmed by these departures. We knew there were going to be some. But if that's who's leaving, I would say looking at the other people we still have, we're okay. And, of course, you know, it's about to be portal season, which Lane Kiffin, I heard, is pretty good at. So I'm not too worried about it. Tommy, Daniel, what's y'all's take?
I mean, I'm not worried about it. I think that, you know, with the big coaching changes that we had, you could see a lot of damage from the portal aspect. You know, we talked about DJ Pickett as a potential guy that it was like he's a must retain. Like you have to, Lane Kiffin needs to come in here and absolutely, like, you know, not do whatever he says, but you know, work as hard as you can to keep him on this roster. We've done that. You know, I would not put Caden Durham. I mean, not Caden Durham. I would not put Caleb Jackson or Juwan Johnson or even Ashton Stamps, who you know I really rooted for, as a must keep guy. And I wish them the best. I think that, you know, that, like you said, Scott, they see the writing on the wall, and I think that they, you know, are at a point in their college career that they want to be playing as much as they can. And I think there, you know, there might be an opportunity for them at another place. So that's the nature of the business. Especially now with the portal the way it is and with NIL the way it is, some of these guys might be saying, hey, I can go play more and I can make money at a smaller school or, you know, in a different conference or something along those lines. So, not a huge surprise there. I think also, I mean, look at specifically with Juwan Johnson, you know, this is a guy who's played like three positions for LSU, recruited, and is like one of the, I think still one of the most decorated high school quarterbacks in Louisiana history. So maybe he's saying, you know, I'm not being utilized to my full potential. You know, they have me as a running back and that's not really what I need to be doing. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see him as a signal caller for another school next year.
Yeah, I agree. And Juwan Johnson specifically, he was doing some kind of somewhat cryptic tweets where he was talking about like him being the Louisiana all-time QB leader. And it seemed that he was a little bit disgruntled that they didn't really give him a shot at the position and they were more interested in moving him around elsewhere. So I think the common theme with all these guys, as well as defensive tackle Ahmad Bro, who is also in the transfer portal, is that they were pretty much either third or fourth in line on the depth chart. And if they're already getting beat out by current LSU players, there's not a whole lot of hope, because this is before Lane Kiffin's even going to bring in his players from either Ole Miss or other sources coming in. So it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. So you can't really blame them too much for looking towards greener pastures. Obviously you want guys who want to work hard and earn their spot on the field, but all of them saw kind of middling playing time. Ashton Stamps was kind of a regular starter last year, actually kind of forced into service, but just a little bit outclassed on the athleticism across the board. So not overly concerned. And it's not like we're having day one starters who were getting off the team right immediately. So this is kind of just the normal churn of the roster, I would say, at this point. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few more kind of like this over the next couple of weeks, but nothing too crazy.
Right.
No, I agree.
Now, as far as him though, because you would think with the issues we had earlier this year with, probably still, you know, just finding some sort of rhythm offensively, someone that can move around. Like if he, Juwan Johnson, that is, if he could have taken over quarterback, I feel like he would have been given that chance, right? Especially with after we give us Van Buren and then they put in Van Buren, are like, who else do we have? You know, and I think we would have seen him if that was the case, like more dominant than he was. Obviously, they brought him in for, you know, things here and there, kind of like the Saints do with Taysom Hill. But he was never like, hey, let's just give him a drive or two, see what he does. You know, I don't feel like they ever did that.
No, they really didn't. And I think it could be a little bit of both. Maybe they overlooked him a little bit. But I think also, like we've talked about, you know, in the depth of this season, when the pitchforks were out for Nussmeier and it was, we've got to move on to Van Buren. Like, we're not there in practice every day. I firmly believe that, especially with a guy like with Joe Sloan, pretty much knowing every day he's coaching for his job. If Juwan Johnson was secretly Johnny Manziel, like, I think he would have played a little bit. You know, maybe he'll prove me wrong, or maybe it's just the system didn't set up for him, or, you know, all the above. But I think that I give this staff, I don't give this staff a ton of credit, but I give it enough credit to say that if there was a better quarterback on this team, especially in like the third, if like I would not bury the best quarterback on the team at third string. Mm-hmm. And if it comes out, if Juwan Johnson transfers and goes on to win the Heisman or something like that, then that will have that will show even further the malpractice of the Brian Kelly era.
I agree.
But other than that, I don't really think there was any. I mean, there's definitely rumors. I mean, there was a couple quarterbacks that entered. Well, excuse me, one quarterback entered the portal. Sorry, that was a guy out of Arizona State. God, I'm forgetting his last
name. Sam Leavitt.
Sam Leavitt. Thank you. And I mean, I texted you guys when I heard about it. It's like, I dare Lane Kiffin to go get this guy. He just looks like, you know, somebody that could be the next Joe Burrow, you know, breaking the next the records we thought would be unbreakable. There is also the situation in Michigan. I don't think Bryce Underwood is really looking to stay there, especially now that that coach is going to be gone. I feel like we could open up that can of worms too, because my goodness, what a story out of Michigan. And if you're Ohio State, you've just got to be like, Christmas came early for you, because that's just a crazy story. But that could mean that maybe Bryce Underwood's in play. I mean, we know Lane Kiffin is no stranger to pulling guys out of not just the portal, but just out of nowhere. You know, Trinidad Chambliss comes to mind. He did get, you know, Jackson Dart to come there, but I mean, there was a came from USC. He has a history there. Jackson Dart wasn't necessarily plucked out of the thin blue air like Chambliss was. But I mean, with those two guys possibly looking to go somewhere, I mean, you start there, or do you? I mean, he's got a nice NIL bank. That's part of the reason that he came here. So does he feel like, yeah, Sam Leavitt's good, dude, but I saw this guy, he plays at Prairie Valley State. I could get him for way less, so I'm going to go after him. Like, what do you – I don't know. You guys have any indications?
I think it's an interesting question, and I really – I'm more interested. I don't have a specific pick. I know that, I mean, Sam Leavitt's gotten a lot of attention, but I think, Daniel, I think you brought it up on the last podcast, is like, he's got injury issues. And so, you know, that's something to watch out for, and something that I don't think either, you know, any of us can really evaluate, just because we're not, you know, in the room and we're not seeing him every day. I think Underwood is an interesting option, especially with Tyrone Moore, you know, being fired at Michigan. But you know, I watched him, and to be honest, I wouldn't say he was a freshman phenom. Like, he didn't take over the game.
No.
Now, is he very capable? Is that something where a coach like Lane Kiffin could take his skill set and really turn it up to 11? Maybe, probably, I don't know. But I would not say he is a you know, shoe-in. He's not Cam Newton, where it's like, you put Cam Newton on any team in 2011, and, you know, you're going to win. So I think I almost feel like the answer is neither of the two. I almost feel like Lane will come up with somebody, you know, outside of the conventional wisdom right now. I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, really, any quarterback in the transfer portal is going to come with a certain amount of question marks, because if they were a Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback in their current situation, there's no reason to transfer in the first place, unless they're so greedy or something, they just need more money. But
I don't know. You know, we saw, like, there is precedent for it. Julian Sayin, who, you know, he only got 8 votes, but he was in the Heisman conversation this year, transferred out of Bama. Justin Fields transferred out of Georgia. And they were not, like, it's not like they had, you know, tore their ACL and their whole career was in question and somebody had to take a chance on them. I mean, Justin Fields came as one of the highest rated quarterbacks in the game, and really left Georgia just because he couldn't get a chance from Jake Fromm, get out from under Jake Fromm.
Yeah, I see your point. I guess I was more thinking of the terms of, like, Leavitt. You said the injuries, he had his season cut short in October this year. And then on Underwood, kind of good but not amazing performance as a true freshman, and yeah, maybe we could turn him up a little bit, but he's already spurned LSU once in the recruiting cycle, and it's like, do we want to risk that again, and do we want to pay the funds for him when maybe there's a better value pick out there? It's a little bit strange to say, like, looking for value in terms of dollars per quarterback or per player, but it is a reality. There's only so much money to go around, and you would want to be able to surround your quarterback with good weapons at the receiver position, at the O-line, especially for LSU, stuff like that to keep him happy and healthy. And so I kind of agree with Tommy that there's probably a middle ground, somebody who's not going to cost a whole ton, but will help us do good enough to take a step up from Van Buren and Nussmeier's performance this year, and attack problem points in the roster elsewhere at the same time.
I'd say the leverage LSU has is, like you alluded to earlier, yeah, you went to Michigan because they were going to offer more money. You could have been playing here this year, obviously. I don't know if we'd have been in the playoff, but maybe. Plus, you know, well, I don't know. Maybe our coach would have stuck around if we'd have won two more games. Probably still would have had some issues because, you know, he was kind of just aloof, you know, off the reservation playing golf when he maybe could have been recruiting other guys. Point being, we already played that game. He went to Michigan. He's already got his money. If LSU, like, why would you? He's like, all right, I'll come down there, but now I want such and such. Now you already got your money. You're coming here to win. Yeah, we'll give him something, but I don't think he should be able to command the same amount because, like you said, it's not like he performed at that level. It's not like he got 10 plus million and he looked like Johnny Manziel out there first year right out of the gate. That didn't happen. Could it happen elsewhere? Sure. But I think there is a more valued talent out there.
If I'm hearing what you're saying, and maybe this is the option, maybe I'm talking myself into Rice Underwood. It's like you can almost get him at a discount because he's I would imagine he's probably going to leave Michigan. Like with this coach, this coaching scenario cannot go well for them. I would be very surprised if you know, then they go out and suddenly land, you know, the next Ryan Day or Kirby Smart out of nowhere after their coach that was handpicked by Jim Harbaugh, the first coach in years to win a national championship at Michigan, handpicked Sharon Moore to take over. I would be very surprised if they go out and get some absolute stud coach. I think they're going to be in the doldrums for a while.
Well, isn't their AD kind of on the hook for this a little bit too? They're starting to look at that now because
it's a whole saga. I mean, it's like every day something new comes out about the problems with Sharon Moore.
Right. How soon before Connor Stallions enters the chat again?
Yeah, really.
Because I feel like it's all still relevant to him somehow. I don't know. Just some weird stuff with the program.
Maybe they should just lean into it and make him the coach.
Sure.
But either way, like I think we can all agree, Michigan's not going in the right direction. And so Bryce Underwood, I would imagine he needs to find a new home. If to continue his dreams of you know, playing at the highest level, going to the NFL, all that. And I don't think that place is going to be Michigan. So maybe he needs to find a new place and he might have to take a pay cut to do it because – like you said, Scott, he didn't light the world on fire in year one.
Mm-mm. Well, we can probably come back to that because we'll have time next week after the first round of the playoffs. There'll be some, you know, because I feel like as some teams kind of exit the playoff, things could happen there. You know, there's some good players out there, and once their team's out, they have a little bit more freedom. I guess some coaches do also, although. As of yet, still no other coaching changes. As I said, Frank Wilson said they're going to figure that out after LSU's bowl game on the 27th. Although, still remains to be seen if Ole Miss's running back coach is coming over or what, or now about the – well, I think – did we get the D-line? No, we didn't get the D-line. I think that's still kind of – fluctuating, right? So
yeah, a lot pending.
No new coaching changes as far as we know as of today. But like I said, maybe things will change after the playoffs, at least the first round, which starts Friday, Oklahoma, Alabama. And of course you have all the others now. I mean, we can go one by one, but I don't know. I would say Oklahoma, Alabama has probably, like, just looking at the Saturday, I don't know. I don't know that I really see any, like, highly competitive games. You know, you have Oregon, James Madison, Ole Miss, Tulane. I don't know, Daniel. I'm thinking I'd love to see that same version of Tulane that showed up against USC and shocked the world. Maybe they still could. They have their coach. It will be, you know, on Ole Miss's turf. And then A&M in Miami. I don't know. Unless I don't see how A&M craps the bed even, you know, I don't think A&M is going to A&M quite this early. I guess that's my guess. What say y'all?
Yeah, my initial thoughts on this is that it might be a home team sweep. The first game on Friday is probably the most intriguing matchup, a matchup that we've already seen this season when Oklahoma did beat Alabama. And so we could have a repeat of that in Norman. I think that Alabama has not been playing their best football as of late. They kind of struggled with South Carolina and with Auburn, and their run game is close to non-existent. So it seems that Oregon, I think, can handle them in a low-scoring kind of drag them out contest. But that should be a fun one to kind of kick things off on Friday evening. On Saturday, it's the triple header starting at the noon game between Miami and Texas A&M, the two teams that beat Notre Dame, kind of the Notre Dame Champions Bowl. This one, I believe, should be pretty competitive as well, but I still think A&M, they got a big home field advantage at Kyle Field, and the line there is A&M 3.5, so they reflect that.
11 a.m. kickoff, too.
That's true. So
just nuts.
Yeah, who can wake up? But the A&M fans are crazy. They'll have the thing packed going to start that, and I think that'll be the difference. And Miami, even though they did deserve to get that spot, A&M will squeak it out. I have high hopes for Tulane going to Ole Miss, but and kind of the same thing for James Madison at Oregon. But I think there's just a bit of a talent gap in both of those matchups. So I don't expect any Cinderella stories, unfortunately, but I will be cheering on the Green Wave to see if maybe they can take advantage of a Lane Kiffin-less kind of confused Ole Miss team and cause some chaos. I think James Madison's going to lose by like 28 points. I think Oregon's going to handle them pretty handily, but should be fun games. Last year it was like 4 blowouts, so I want at least one kind of competitive game.
Yeah, I think the you've got two shots for I guess three, but really I look at two shots for good games. I think A&M is going to handle Miami. But I think the Alabama-Oklahoma game, like you said, Daniel's the most intriguing. They've got it on that Friday night spot at 7 p.m. Right now, Alabama's favored by 1.5. But I tend to lean Oklahoma. I like John Mateer. I think that they've kind of settled in. But I don't think either of these teams are elite. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it goes, you know, I think it's going to be a toss-up. Like I said, I think A&M's going to handle Miami. I really like what they've done. And, I know they slipped up against Texas right at the end of the year, but, I think they're just a better team. I've been saying it for a little bit now, and I'm going to stick to my guns, and I might be completely, embarrassed when it's all said and done, but I think Tulane has a chance. I think they're definitely going to cover it. I'll put money on it. I think they're going to cover the 17.5. I'm really interested to see how Pete Golding's able to put this Ole Miss team together. I have a lot of respect for it. I like Pete Golding a lot. I liked him at Bama as the defensive coordinator. I thought it was a great hire by Lane Kiffin when he brought him to Ole Miss. And I would have been excited to see him come with Kiffin. Now, I mean, I'm glad we keep Blake Baker. I think, you know, both of them are great defensive coordinators, but I would have liked to have him at LSU. But I think that Ole Miss is, I think they're in a tough spot. They're in the toughest spot of all the teams hosting, I think. And I could see things getting a little bit out of sync for them. I know they have Charlie Weiss back, which is going to be good. That settles them on the offensive side of the ball. But still, I think they're still, and you can see it on Twitter, like the Ole Miss world has not stopped spinning since Lane left, and I think that can impact them. Mm-hmm. Now it could come out the other way, and they could come out and play as hard, you know, play their hardest and really put on a show to spite Lane. I don't know. I think that the energy that Tulane has of, you know, Summerall is coaching his way out. They're proud of him. They're proud of this team. I think there's some momentum that Tulane has. And then finally, I think you're right, Daniel. I James Madison, I do not think has a chance. I think Oregon is going to win big. They're favored by 21.5. I think they cover, like you said. And I feel like Oregon is kind of the team that's been slept on towards the end of the season. I thought they were, I mean, especially towards, you know, the very beginning of the season, I thought they were one of the best teams in the country. Of course, they're number five right now, but I feel like people aren't talking about them as much as some of the other teams. And so I think they're going to make a statement win, to close out the playoff, the mm-hmm. first round.
Now, the interesting thing about the Ole Miss Tulane game, whoever wins faces Georgia in the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. I think either case, you're talking about quite a party down in New Orleans for New Year's
Day. Can you imagine if Tulane does win and then they go play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl for a berth in the college football playoff? That'd be insane.
Exactly. So that's on the line. That's why I don't think Tulane's going to completely fall flat. But Ole Miss, yeah, if they win that, they get to go play Georgia. And honestly, Georgia fans show up well too. New Orleans, no stranger to people from Athens. So I would expect both teams in full force. That would be a good game too. I don't know. I feel like in either case, man, Georgia's just hitting on all cylinders. They're playing on fire, and I would expect them to win that one. No bias on my end, of course. Definitely no bias. But looking beyond that, you know, you have Ohio facing the winner of A&M, Miami. We all think that's going to be A&M, so that could be a good game. That's the Cotton Bowl in Texas. So I guess Texas A&M would have the home field advantage for that one. Then, of course, you know, the winner of the Oklahoma-Alabama would face Indiana. That's in the Rose Bowl. Southern California, where none of these teams really have played in a while except for maybe Alabama. I know they played a title game there. Then, of course, I talked about the Sugar Bowl. So, Texas Tech would get the Oregon James Madison winner in the Orange Bowl. I don't know. Texas Tech's kind of flown under the radar. I mean, I know they're number four. I don't know. We usually talk about the Blue Buds and everybody else. So we haven't really talked about them, but I don't know, that could be somebody. 4-5 Texas Tech against Oregon. That could be a really good game. One that nobody saw coming, but.
So right now, looking ahead up to that matchup, Texas Tech is favored by 1.5 in that theoretical Oregon Texas Tech game.
Interesting.
Like looking like way ahead. Now we haven't seen it. You know, I haven't seen these teams play. And I mean, I watched Texas Tech last week in the championship game against BYU, but haven't seen Oregon play in a couple weeks. And you know, we'll see everything on Saturday. But I feel like I kind of like Oregon against Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like what Dan Lanning's done there a lot.
I mean, their only loss on the season is a squeaker to the number one team in the country, Indiana. So they've taken care of everybody else they played.
Yep.
Right. Now, there is one team who we do not have any bowl news for. That's because they've opted out. Notre Dame felt snubbed by the playoff. They are just not going to play their bowl game. And if that's the way they want to play it, I say, fine. From here on out, it's obviously for them, it's playoffs or nothing. So maybe they just didn't like, they knew they weren't going to get the bowl draw that they wanted. So I'd say for them, yeah, if you're not going to do a conference, if you're not going to do all that, you either get to go to the playoffs or you guys just watch from home for all the other bowls, right? Does that seem fair?
Yeah, they kind of took their football home from the park and said, I'm going home, guys. There's been kind of a lot of dunking on them for that. And then the kind of the guaranteed spot next year, if they're in the top 12 or whatever, it seems like they're being a little bit of bad sports about it, which maybe comes with the Notre Dame aura and history and an independent vibe. It's hard to say that they're necessarily too in the wrong, but maybe not the best look.
Right. And then, I mean, I don't know if you saw the report today. Marcus Freeman's being looked at for the New York Giants job from what I'm seeing. So
what?
Yeah, like, I don't know how true that is. I saw it come across my desk and I mean, it was a little bit intriguing there. I think he's a great coach, so it wouldn't be surprising to me if NFL coaches, I mean, if NFL teams were looking at him, but yeah, I mean, he's done a lot. He's I feel like he's elevated the Notre Dame program since Kelly left. Like Notre Dame has moved up from where Kelly had it. And to lose him, would not be good for them.
Probably not. But I mean, you know, they've got such a brand. You know, I'm sure they can attract some next hot coach. But
Maybe they could hire Sharon Moore.
He's got to go somewhere.
He's available.
He's not going to stay in Ann Arbor. Absolutely not. You brought it up. That's just talk about just having it all there, and then you just risk it all for basically the
or
you know
a
the
grad
office
assistant.
Yeah, the office secretary. Basically, I mean, God, dream job, wife, three daughters, and you were like you said earlier. He was just given this job on a silver platter. And I mean, it wasn't just her. It's like, this is just his nature. Like there was some OnlyFans model that came out. Like, yeah, he was offering me season tickets, me and these other three girls for like a foursome for season tickets. I'm like, I do OnlyFans. I have money. I could buy them if I wanted them. But she outed him that way. I'm like, wow, this dude's just a dirty dog, and he got caught. And now he lost his job. I mean, that's just crazy. And yeah, now the AD's being looked at, because how did nobody know this was going on? I mean, it's.
Well, there was reports that people knew since like early last year, like it's been going on for a while, and they almost kind of covered it up a little bit. But stuff like this can't stay covered up for forever.
Did you see the things on Twitter? It was like pictures of Bobby Petrino. It was like Bobby Petrino walked so Sharon Moore could run.
Right. Oh my goodness. I mean, yeah, at least Sharon didn't get into a motor vehicle accident. Although he did show up at her house and oh my God, he got arrested. So that's just holy cow.
It's almost worse.
Well, yes, it totally is. At least he's not showing up to a press conference with a neck brace and just like a road rash face. There's not that.
Yeah.
You know,
that was kind of iconic.
It was. And he was like, F you. You know, he was just mad at the world that he got caught. Anyway, having gone through all that, like I don't know. We did say there was no real LSU coaching news. I did think it was interesting that Lane is basically given his okay. He's going to let all these Ole Miss assistants go back with what's his name? God, the offensive coordinator,
Charlie Weiss.
Thank you. With Charlie Weiss to coach. I don't know. We still don't know about their running back coach. Is he going to come over? So I don't know. LSU's already got some term sheets listed out, but I don't know. Do you think there's any weird territory where like they'll go back and coach and like, oh man, I miss this group. Maybe I should stay here. You know, that type of thing. Or do you think it's weird at all that it's one thing to let the OC go, but if you're letting all these staffers go back, I don't know. Any qualms about that whatsoever? I don't think maybe there really should be, but you never know, right?
Yeah, I could see it, but I don't. I'm really not concerned. Like I think that coaches in general, and if you're choosing to leave Ole Miss, like I think you recognize that LSU is just a better program, and so I wanted to coach in the playoff. I totally get, and like you've worked so hard to bring this group, and they're at a point they've never been in the history of the program. They're
right
bringing a playoff game and hosting it at their in Oxford. So I totally understand wanting to be a part of that, but I don't think that any of these coaches are going to be blinded by, oh my gosh, look, like it's a playoff game, by one playoff game to say like, yeah, this is a better spot.
Right. At first I thought there was kind of a weird like conflict of interest situation there, but I maybe rationalize it a little bit. Like these guys, they're coaches. They coach this team all year. They want to kind of finish the job. I would say, I don't think there's going to be anybody like intentionally sabotaging Ole Miss or something like that. And they get performance bonuses. If they win, they want to go as far as they can and put it on their resume. Like if they're going to a future job down the road in a few years, they want to have that line that says national champion 2025 or whatever. Yeah. And so it's kind of a win for them. And I understand kind of not letting Lane coach a la John Summerall at Tulane. So it's kind of two sides of the coin there, but the assistants, it's like, just kind of let them do their jobs and we'll sort all this out a little bit down the road.
Right. Speaking of down the road, I did want to talk about this, cause I don't know if this is going to be something that we'll see more of, or if this is just a I don't know, just like a test balloon of some kind. But kind of going back to recruiting and NIL, Utah, as in the University of Utah, the Utes, they are forming a partnership with a private equity firm, which I guess means there's going to be, you know, just Wall Street-minded people running their school, their athletic department. So all of that, I mean, you generally think those things run hand in hand anyway, but maybe not really, but now they will be. It's, you know, there is a big business with sports and just revenue, licensing deals, all that, especially with the NIL now. I don't know. Do you think you would see, do we wait and see how this plays out, or do you think other schools will do it and just like, well, yeah, let those guys do it. Let the number crunching nerds handle this stuff. We'll just focus on football. Or is this, I don't know, kind of like with a lot of good companies out there, it's like the beginning of the end for some of them, you know?
Well, go ahead, Tommy.
I was just going to say, like, I see this as a negative for the sport. Kyle Whittingham announced, I guess, 2 days ago that he's leaving the program, retiring or stepping down or however you want to put it. And I think he's been there for like over 20 years and has, you know, been a great coach for them. I would be very concerned if I was a Utah fan in this. Bringing private equity in is not something I'd want to do as an LSU fan, of, you know, no matter the money that it brings in the program, because I think you see it in professional sports where, like, to me, like, think about the Atlanta Braves, who are owned by like a ownership group, not an owner, not a person. And, you know, like, there's not a Jerry Jones or a Steinbrenner behind that organization that says, okay, I want to make like all these investments to win, because winning doesn't always make financial sense. Like, investing in a big name or getting, you know, a stacked roster doesn't always equal more ticket sales or a bigger TV deal or something like that. So I do have concern I'm interested to watch how this goes for Utah, but like, you know, is this going to, are they going to be given like a, basically an NIL budget that says you can spend this much money and you win however many games you win? You know, is it going to, I think it could have an impact like that, and could kind of put them in a bit of a rut.
Mm-hmm. I have kind of a few different thoughts on this, and you could probably talk at length, which we don't need to do, but I agree with Tommy. This is not the best thing for college sports. And in general, if you've been kind of keeping a pulse on the state of finance and business over the last few years, private equity has been kind of under the gun in terms of their kind of not seizure, but takeover of maybe beloved family businesses or even national businesses and kind of
housing.
Yeah.
And buying like just houses and then, you know, renting to people.
Yeah. And they kind of grind it out, squeeze the juice for all the short-term profits they can, and then flip them for whatever's left maybe 5 years down the road. And I mean, these are financial institutions. They're really only end goal is the dollar, which is good for them, but doesn't necessarily align with kind of the traditional spirit and feeling of college sports, where we want these historic rivalries and we want to win and we want to party and have fun while we're doing it. It is a business in itself. You need dollars to do all those things, but they don't necessarily jive super well. I think it's a little bit overblown and this Utah news, because as I understand it, it's not like a private equity company is necessarily like taking ownership of like the Utah athletic program or football team or whatever. It's more just kind of a source of like private funds, really, where it's almost like they're providing a loan to Utah, because it, like I said, it costs money to do these things, hundreds of millions of dollars. So Utah is kind of just getting some money. But the converse to that is, the private equity, they expect returns in the end. They've got a nerd on his computer in the office who's run all the numbers. And in their opinion, this is a win for the company. They're going to get more money out than they would put in. They wouldn't do it if they didn't think they're not getting long-term gains. So the bill is going to come due for Utah. And if this continues across other schools, then for schools like LSU as well. One thing that kind of jumps to mind for me is, you think about maybe like European or English soccer teams, where you see like the Arabian sheiks and stuff, like from the UAE and Saudi Arabia, kind of like buying these programs kind of out of nowhere just for billions. And sometimes it works in like the money they put in turns them into big winners, like Manchester City. For any of our listeners who know that, they were kind of middle of the road. They got bought out by an Arabian sheik, and now they're like perennial dominator just because they have so much more money than everybody else. And there's been plenty of jokes. It's like as soon as some oil like baron in the Middle East decides that his favorite team is Western Michigan, like college football is going to change forever. That seems a bit far-fetched, but it could go down that road eventually where there's some power players, corporations, and other businesses kind of moving the pieces around.
You don't even have to look that far, look to Saudi Arabia. You can look to West Texas. That's what happened with Texas Tech.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just whoever's got the most money has the most bargaining chips on the table for now. And don't want to go too far down the slippery slope, but I mean, we're already there with the NIL money and paying rosters and just the general big business of it. So kind of crazy to see, but I would say red alert at this point.
I think the difference is, and you brought it up, like the private equity firm making this investment, they are doing it to see a return of some sort, but the big time donor or the sheik or whoever, like their return might be just wins and a championship and notoriety and access for a lot of these donors, these NIL donors, whether it's LSU or Texas Tech or any of these programs, access is what you're getting a lot of times. I mean, hanging out with the coaches, having the coach on speed dial, he picks up your call, being able to go to practice, being able to go to the facility. And so, you know, you might be taking like a huge loss as far as like investing in these athletes for NIL deals or giving to the university or any of the ways that you support the program, but you're winning in non-dollar value. But the private equity firm doesn't care about access to the facilities or, you know, being able to talk to the coach.
Yeah. The scary thing is if they do make some sort of big investment, this is when you expect things like ticket prices to go up, concession prices to go up, like any little bit they can get out of you, parking, like then you could get those fan experiences where it's like pay $1,000 to hang out for an hour with one of the players, but they'll do anything in their power to get that dollar, and it may be to the ultimate detriment of the program. And that kind of jives. LSU actually just released their audited financial statements for the athletic department for 2024 this year. So that was it. If anybody's interested, just Google that and you'll find the PDF. But football was about $50 million profitable. Men's basketball was $1 million profitable, and everything else was way in the hole.
Even baseball?
Baseball wasn't profitable?
Baseball, $2 million in the red this year. So they had a lot more
title.
They had a lot more revenue. So baseball had $6.5 million in revenue compared to, well, basketball still had $10 million in revenue. I think that's just their SEC like TV deal. Where we're just like, we're in there, so we get the money whether we're good or not. And then the big losers were women's basketball, which was $8.5 million in the red because they had actually had more expenses than the men's, but way less revenue just because of the TV deal. And then you might not believe this one, but track and field was $7.3 million in the red. And so, apparently this dude, they have a huge roster and they do a ton of traveling, like by
plane. A lot of people.
Makes sense.
And here's a little fun fact. The men's tennis team was the lowest grossing. They only had $4,000 in revenue for all of 2024 against $1.3 million in expenses. So that's not great if your team can only bring in $4,000.
You know, when I was a student, I went to a tennis match. Because they gave out free t-shirts and the t-shirt looked really cool. And so I went to the tennis match, but I mean, I didn't pay obviously because I was a student and I was probably one of like 10 people there.
Well, having done college athletics and been on the road before, I don't know how all these teams are going, but that's a huge amount. And if you're playing in the Southeastern Conference, I have to imagine probably your furthest game away would be what? Florida, South Carolina, maybe Kentucky, if you're doing all that. Everything else, I'm sorry, you got to cut out the planes. We're going to do vans. We're going to do 2-day overnights. We're going to study in the hotel room. That's how you get back in the green. I know Verge has probably thought about that, but Tom, if you want me to talk to him, I have insight.
Let's set it up.
I have insight. Okay. That, I mean, you got to save money somewhere, right? So we can't have Doge come into LSU's athletic department and figure out how to make it all work. And to go back to the Utah thing, yeah, they could probably squeeze some money out of people to make more, but like they're always going to want to compound their return. So the only way to do that, it's like, how could they possibly do that unless Utah became the Alabama of college football and won like, you know, two here, miss a year, then they win another one, and then another one another year later. Like there, that's just, I think that's an impossible bar. Like there's got to be a ceiling to how much return you can get from Utah athletics, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just to put a bow on the LSU finance stuff, the overall, including stuff like concessions and merchandise, and they have a line item for sports productions, which I don't know what that means, but apparently it brought in $21 million.
That's, sports productions is like their media. They have like a separate company that I think owns their media rights that then that they then buy back or sell
the radio network, the LSU sports
radio network. The TV, the highlights and all that.
Cool Insta, the videos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that was a big profit center. But all that is to say LSU was minus 800,000 for 2024, which on the whole is basically like a rounding error to zero. So basically break even. So not too good or bad, but football by and large is the only dominating one. So hopefully we keep doing well on the field there.
Yeah, and we can definitely do more if you're winning. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I had. Do you guys have anything else you wanted to?
I just wanted to mention, of course, the Heisman was awarded last night for Fernando Mendoza.
Right.
Really no surprise there. But Julian Sayin came in fourth place with, did you see how many votes he got?
Mm. Not many.
Eight votes.
Eight.
Which I was like, that's kind of crazy. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think we talked about it before. This was like a little bit of a lackluster year for Heisman Trophy in general. But a guy who only gets eight votes, I don't even know if he should be on the stage.
Mm. I kind of thought they were going to give it to Diego Pavia of Vanderbilt, and he finished in second place. But I'm glad it went to Mendoza. Pavia was kind of doing his usual stick, like kind of drumming up the media. He's wearing the gold chains on the stage and all that. Also, random takeaway, but did y'all see like when they lined all the players up and Pavia was like way shorter than everybody else, and like he's listed as 6 foot, and it's like people are like, this guy, man, is like 5'7", so that may have hurt his NFL prospects a little bit.
I'm kind of glad he didn't win either, just because of just his attitude. But I saw an interview and they asked, because you know, people have these weird brackets of who's the best player in college football, so who's better, Johnny Manziel or Lamar Jackson? He said, neither, me. Like, what? Are you listening to the question or to yourself?
You have to believe in yourself.
That's right. Awesome. But then he just thought that he deserved to win the Heisman, that he thought he was just the God's gift to college football, which is just ridiculous. So I'm glad he didn't win, because then we would have had to deal with that. Hopefully
forever.
He just fades away. He's going to go play like arena football somewhere and be king. Good for him. Okay, but yes, thank you. I forgot to bring up the Heisman, but yes, congrats to Mendoza. Good for him. Couldn't have gone to probably a nicer guy, although if I don't ever have to hear a acceptance speech from him again, it won't be too soon.
I agree.
Yeah.
One other note. Caleb Downs won the Thorpe Award over Mansoor Delane.
Yeah.
Just
for what reason though?
I feel like it's a little bit of a Grant Delpit situation where he won it on the play of last year. But just another note. I mean, Mansoor Delane, I think, was clearly the best DB in college football. So
yeah, numbers don't lie.
Yeah, but anyways, that's all I got.
Okay, Daniel, anything else?
No, enjoy this weekend of college football. One of the last ones we get this year. So, have fun while it lasts.
Have fun indeed. I'd seen, just following LSU stuff, there's a lot of Louisiana high school football news still coming out. Cause you know, LSU has, guys in the mix still, but, a lot of crazy finishes too, man. Like, a missed extra point, and then, an early celebration.
Yeah.
You get a penalty and then you punt. And then what was it? It was a Catholic school came back to win it with a long field goal when they thought they were just dead in the water. So there was that. God, who was it? Was it Edna Carr? They didn't ended up winning again. Yep. Craziness. But I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next week. We will have the first round of the playoffs in the books and go over that with you folks, as well as any other news that does become available within that time. So until then, I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.